Welcome to a bonus episode of The Whole View. I'm Stacey Toth of Real Everything, and I'm here each week to dive deeper into how we can find happiness and health inside and out through self-love, body positivity, and discovering new ways to be our best selves. Before we get started, a reminder, this podcast is for general educational purposes and is not intended to diagnose, advise, or treat any physical or mental illness. And this, we're not actually focusing on direct health things, but one of the concepts that I talk about often on the show is the idea of considering community care as part of public health and how can we focus on our health if we're not safe or how other people in the world are safe. And so today I'm excited to welcome two guests and authors to the show who wrote the book Defiant Dreams, Sola and Milena. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am wondering, can you share a little bit about yourself and what this book is about? And we have a lot of messages and different things that we'll get into, questions in the show, but just to introduce listeners to your voice and a little bit about yourselves each. Milena, do you want to start?
Sure, sounds great. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Milena Kapoor. I'm a junior at Stanford University. And I'm also the co-author of this book, Defiant Dreams. And I'll let my co-author, Sola, share a lot about what it's about, because really this story is her life story of growing up in Afghanistan and secretly educating herself. But I think what really drew us together and drew us to this project is the idea that, yes, this is Sola's story, and it's the story of one girl who defied incredible odds in Afghanistan. But now it's also the story of millions of girls in the country who are being denied an education under the new Taliban regime, who are being denied basic human rights. And so our real hope in working together and sharing this story is that hopefully it brings awareness to an issue that women in Afghanistan are fighting every day, but also that women and girls and anyone all across the world who cares about human rights, who cares about the dignity and progress of other groups of people should really care about.
Thank you for that explanation. I think it's deeply important. And I think as we consider the state of the world and not just the individual story, there's a lot that's applicable that without that personal lived experience for so many of us, especially in the States or across North America, most of the listeners, Australia, different kinds of countries like that, it's not something we fully understand. And what we see on the news is not necessarily a true experience. So Sola, I'm so glad that you're here to share your story. Can you introduce yourself and a little more about your journey and the book?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So, you know, currently I live in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a researcher at Tufts University. I do develop quantum algorithms, but I was born in Afghanistan. And when I was 16 years old, I did not even know how to add and subtract. That was because when I was 11 years old, that was around 2005, 2006, a group of men came to our door and threatened my family for us to stop going to school. And so from that day on, I lived in the confines of my own house and I left home only a couple of times a year. And whenever I did, I had to wear this suffocating burqa that covered me from head to toe. But meanwhile, my brothers were going to school and they were thriving academically, and I felt jealous of their lives and they had this purpose in life. And meanwhile, my life just danced around to the rhythm of the outside world. And then I asked questions about the meaning of life and what's my purpose. And so when I was 14, I started self-teaching. I started learning English. And then when I was 16, I started learning math and science using Khan Academy. And so Defiant Dream is the story of how I went from that to then going 3 years from not knowing how to add and subtract to study college level calculus and physics, and then take the SAT and come to the US. And of course, there was many challenges in each step of the way and finally come to the US. But yeah, so Defiant Dream is much more than that, but it captured the main theme is about the struggle to get an education.
It is incredible that you are self-taught in so many of the different things that you're describing. And I know what Tufts University is, a brand that I partner with, uses them for third-party validation and research of safety testing and different things. And so that's really cool that you are not just here, but thriving in a capacity that you probably couldn't have envisioned for yourself. Your younger self could not have imagined where you are today. And I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more about how access to technology and being online played that role in bridging the education gap. Because I wouldn't have thought, in my own ignorance, right, that if someone is like stuck in their own house without access to education, that they would even have access to the internet, or what kinds of things are even allowed on the internet. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Sure. So initially when I started learning in English, and that time also internet was new and it was really slow, and you just got this like dial-up connection, and that would like take long time for it to connect, and to download one video you just have to like stay for like the whole night. The laptop needs to be open for it, the video to be downloaded. But it was still an access to the outside world. And initially I would watch for hour and hour BBC or CNN, and like I would understand a word or two for English. And then like over time I had a grip on English, but there was so much like on the news. I watched war, and there in Afghanistan there was war, there was suicide bomb exploding. And so all around me was war, and I wanted something different to enter my brain. And then my brother was going to Pakistan, and in Kandahar, there was not really like a lot of English learning materials, only the newspapers, which was again about wars and violence. And so my brother brought me, among other things, Time magazine. And flipping through the pages, I came across Khan Academy. And I opened my laptop, and immediately there was this advertisement for algebra, the beauty of algebra. And I immediately felt like this, the Khan Academy, I was like, I want this. But then I was like, oh, maybe it's too hard for me. Like, I just overheard conversation from my brothers and male cousins that this algebra is so hard. Like, you just want an equation, but it takes pages of proofs to come to the answer. And it's, again, just like one line of answer. And it just was so intrigued by it, but I knew it was really hard. And so I asked my brother, like, what comes after addition and subtraction? Because this is too hard for me. And so he told me, oh, fractions. And I went to, and like after a few days of being disappointed, maybe Khan Academy is not for me, then I went to open up Khan Academy again and search fractions, and I found them. And I went back to study my addition subtraction, but that's how my journey continued. But of course, the dial-up connection was extremely slow, and we had big family, and I could only access it when anyone else was using. And so, yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah, and if I can just add, because I think access to the internet is such a key pivot point of the book and of Sola's story, but also her experience was so different. Growing up in the United States, I used Khan Academy. I used resources online. I'm sure most people now do, but it's just a dramatically different experience. Like Sola said, first of all, she was only able to use the internet in the middle of the night, because during the day she was required to cook and clean as a woman in her household. It was this extremely slow dial-up connection where you can maybe access one video in the space it would take us here in the US to access 20. And then also something we write about in the book too are the mental barriers. The fact that even when that internet access was there, what would drive someone like Sola to actually think that she could use that? Because in Kandahar, in the south of the country where Sola grew up, especially, there was this widespread belief that not only should women not get an education, is actually dangerous, even physically dangerous for women. And so I remember Sola would tell me stories about how she would be studying for hours and then she would get a headache, like we all do if you're staring at something for too long. But she would see that initially as proof that, oh, there's something wrong when a girl studies this. I'm going to be sick because girls aren't supposed to access education. And so just thinking about all those levels of barriers that existed at a time that most people here in the States thought was actually much, much safer for girls in Afghanistan. And I think it's important to realize that even with access to the internet, she faced so many obstacles. And now we can multiply that by millions to try and understand the immensity of what's going on right now.
No, that's such a good perspective. And I think I chuckled solo when you talked about your slow internet, because I'm a little bit older than both of you. And that is what the internet was like for me when I was first starting the internet. And I remember like downloading a photo and like a line.
Yeah. It's just like each, and then you feel so happy, like, oh,
fine. You're like, I'm almost there. But it's not something that my children can even comprehend, right? Like if they are off the Wi-Fi and using cell data and things are slower for them, they're like, what's going on? Like they can't process that. And they also, like, for me to think about the different lived experience of you both, they have access to Khan Academy and learning, and all they do is complain about it, right? Like here you are, you're like, oh my gosh, look at this thing I've discovered. Mm-hmm. I'm interested and excited and it's going to change my actual life. And meanwhile, my kids who have access and privilege to so much are like, oh my God, we have to do fractions. We have to do algebra, like these kinds of things. And I think it's not only is it an incredible story, but I think for listeners, it's important for us to have perspective on the privilege and the access that we have to things and how that has literally changed our lives and our experiences and the capability that we have to do the things that we want in life. Because I think oftentimes we get caught up in the nuance of what we still want to fight for without fully recognizing all of the people who don't yet have access to the things that we do and that we could fight for them to do those things as well. I am curious, how did you all meet and decide to take on a passion project of sharing this story and getting it out there?
Yeah, so Sola and I first met in 2020 during the pandemic. We couldn't meet in person, but we happened to be just connected through a mutual friend. And Sola started telling me stories from her life, and I started writing them. And that became the basis for this book, Defiant Dreams. But eventually we were able to meet in person, and we formed this really close friendship that I think came about in a couple of different ways. One is that when someone's telling you stories from their life, that can't happen in a vacuum. You have to connect both ways. And so even before we could meet in person, we'd spend hours on the phone just talking and getting to know each other. And also because my family is Indian American and there are a lot of cultural similarities between, obviously it's very different situations, but still there are a lot of cultural similarities between the two countries in terms of everything from food to music to just basic facts of life. And so I think we really connected on that and wanting to share the nuances and the subtleties of the culture that Sola grew up in through this book, rather than simply moving through the plot points of her life. And now I think this book is out and we are obviously sharing Sola's story, but we're also trying to think about ways to take our collaboration and work together to now build curriculum for schools so younger kids can learn about what's happening in Afghanistan, because that's, as a student in the US, that's how I first learned about issues around girls' education and women's rights. But it's been a really beautiful friendship to share.
I think the idea of taking that lived experience and applying it in a way that can be a curriculum, whether it's for children here that have access to learn more, but also in our ability for those of us that do have access to create and make accessible tools to enable others who don't, right? Like, I think if Khan Academy knew that's your story, right? That's who was taking their classes and all of that stuff versus thinking that they were writing curriculum just for students already enrolled in public school in the States. Like, it's a very different experience and would probably have more validation and different kinds of things built into the process of some of the roadblocks that you were experiencing, right? So that you would get that sense of, okay, I am doing really great, and not doubting yourself all along the way. It takes incredible willpower and strength and bravery to do what you have done. And there are so many others who don't have that kind of support either in their home or the personal fortitude to be able to push through. And for those people, I think we often who have privilege feel very uncomfortable with that because we're like, oh, I feel badly about that, but I can't do anything about it. And so we shut our brain down to it. But there are things that we can do, becoming educated, talking about it, and creating safety for people through access to education is incredibly powerful. I think for those who are stuck in that place of like, I can't even comprehend that lived experience, what do you recommend as far as like thinking about processing it and thinking about sharing the information to become more comfortable with a story that it feels really sad? When it, like, I don't want to say that you are sad. It is the lived experience that you had that took away your autonomy and disempowered you and these kinds of things that feels gut-wrenching to know that so much of that still exists in the world.
Yeah, I think it's important to, one of the reasons why I shared my story really is not that Afghans are not, and I don't think anyone really are like passive victims. And even as they might, you might see them like go there home, but they still, there's so many ways they still resist and they still have hopes and they still have, and right now, you know, from the outside, you see so much, you feel like so much darkness. And even I who live there, I do feel that too. But when I talk to people, there's still so many like girls, they want to resist, they go to underground school, even if it's so risky. They still like, even like they still want to learn English, even if that means like, they know that they're never going to leave Afghanistan, but yet there is this hunger for knowledge. And I think just knowing that you no longer like wrap yourself in the sadness of the situation. You rather think about it like, oh, if they're living that and they still feel that way, they still are resisting, they still are finding moments of happiness and joy in their life. That's how I see it. And yeah, and I think as like a human, I think we're resilient even. No matter how much the outside tried to crush us, there is still ways, even we never, because of the circumstances, we're never going to be able to fully get ourselves out of the situations. But I think we still like in small ways, we always try to resist. And I think just knowing that, well, maybe help us think differently about situation that feels more depressing or sad.
I think also just speak directly to the book. The setting in some ways, as you said, is a sad setting. It's a setting that is in a country that has endured war and poverty. But our goal with the book was also to show the beauty and the humor of life and the incredible defiance that Zola had. We tell stories about how when confronted with a potential mother-in-law who wanted to arrange her marriage, Zola darted out of the room and literally ran away in the face of that situation. We tell stories about, the book opens with the scene of how Sola's father, whatever your stereotypes are about what you think an Afghan man is, about how he loves to dance with his young children and then with his young nieces and nephews and grandchildren. We tell the story of how in the face of all obstacles, Sola crossed one of the most dangerous borders of the world into Pakistan just to take the SAT, that test that we all take for granted. And she made it. And now she's a quantum physics researcher. So this is a story that has deep sadness as well, but it's also something more than that. And hopefully it's easier for people to digest what's happening in Afghanistan and that part of the world when they see it through someone else's really deeply personal story.
Absolutely. And I love, Sola, that you're science-minded because I'm a super nerd, like super, super nerd. I'm wondering, as we think about the state that you came from to where you are now in Boston, how do some of the experiences that you're witnessing mirror those that you've experienced in the States, or is very different from it? And the reason I ask is because I think of the States and the experience that I had, but there's also an experience of people who live in rural areas who are without the same kind of access or who don't have supportive family and friends who believe that women have equal rights and are still of the mindset of women belong in the home. Here in the States, it's been less than a generation, really, that women have been able to get our own bank account without a man, right? Like that was, for you guys, that feels very long ago, but it really happened like right before I was born. And so there are still so many things that we're fighting for equality-wise here. And I think we've talked a lot about the differences, but I'm wondering, Sola, having now been in the States, like how do you compare the two in a way that kind of helps us think about both the differences and similarities that we can also think about working on here as well as internationally? Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like I like look back into like patriarchy a lot and how it's like a thread that connects the oppression of women all over the world. Of course, Afghanistan is an example of the extremist of the extreme right now, but that doesn't mean like the whole world, as you said, has solved this problem. And I think you can see that really in like more, for example, a lot in physics, for example, there's not a lot of women and a lot of fields that requires more like the self-indulgence of work. And it's like physics, philosophy, all those fields like math and a lot of the sciences, there are less and less women. And I think that is a kind of reflection of the patriarchy, because I think women, a lot of the time, they're expected to be social and things like that. And these feels like you just have to be in your head and doing this thing. So I think that's how I see it. And for example, when I was at Arizona State University, I was taking this graduate level physics, quantum physics class. And initially there was like four or some women, and gradually it's all dropped. And then I was the only one left. And I was talking to one of my mentors. I was like, how is that? We know these women, they have like studied and then took those exams and now they're in graduate school, and the quantum field theory is like a notoriously hard subject. And so they dropped, and she was telling me like, you know what? I think you are lucky because you don't see the patriarchy of Afghanistan, but you don't know the patriarchy of the US. So there's still like that idea of being hard, or like you have to, yeah. So it's like the fear of failure or maybe. And so this was one realization that's like, oh, it exists here too. So.
Things you've already overcome that we're still stuck in the mindset of.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how we as individuals can work to support the efforts to give that encouragement and safety for everyone. And I think bringing out the idea of how there aren't as many women in the field of science is a really great point. There have been a lot of activations, I know at least in my county, to encourage more broad applicability of STEM in school systems and really encouraging females specifically to engage in STEM. But I also had this like conversation with someone recently where I personally, when I was a child, ranked like top in the state for math, and it was embarrassing for me. Like, and so this is where like my lived experience versus your lived experience is very different, right? Because I didn't want to be a nerd. I didn't want to embrace that smart side of myself. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be edgy and like all these things as a kid. And so I was very dismissive about my knowledge, my skills, and I actually reduced my education possibilities. I could have gone to special school. I could have like done these things, and I declined all those possibilities. And yet I still flourished and thrived. I ended up going to college. I ended up finding my inner nerd eventually. But I think that part of that is this, whether it's part of the patriarchy or it's rooted in our cultural belief of what we value, right? Because for me, what I valued was not intelligence at that age. What I valued was not those things, and how I saw success was very different than how I see success now. And I think back to if someone would have encouraged me, because I was a very bossy person, I was very sassy. And if they would have said the key to being the CEO of a company is to actually understand numbers and to truly be in the data and to like know your accounting information and to like be organized and those kinds of things. I think I really would have like grasped onto that and saw that like I could be boss, right? Like I could use my nerdiness, my love of numbers in a way that it was cool for me. But that never translated. And in the States, the percentage of female CEOs is so, so low. And I think about like your experience and what you overcame, and then also what we are going through here in the States, culturally, societally, educationally. And I'm thinking like, what do we as individuals need to do to support the efforts globally, because we do have progress to make at home. And we also want to not continue to grow ourselves and leave other people behind, right? Like we want to be a rising tide that lifts everybody forward.
Yeah, I think one thing is the entertainment culture, which I think really is patriarchal. And I think a lot of the directors who are male, they make one kind of movies. And I think the first thing really is to have more female-centric movies that is not, and the empowerment really comes like by knowing and having those kind of characters, I think would help. And I think, yeah, secondly, like for me, it was the opposite. Like I would always like, oh, I would know those things and then I can be like my brothers. It was always about that kind of a thing. It wasn't. So I think I always felt like, oh, if I know this thing, I would be so happy. And so I think for me, happiness was always directly related to what I knew. And to this day, like I still like when I feel like sometimes I feel unhappy or something, like I feel like I have to learn something new. And it's only then I feel happy. And I think maybe connecting those kind of tying learning to those kind of things, I think. And also it makes you a very confident person to be able to talk about things in a coherent way. And explaining things, I think we live in a world that's very complicated. And just knowing this and be able to, if you look at a star, okay, what's its formation, how it came up, things like that. Or just like looking at some social aspect, a war or something like that. And, oh, okay, this was happening. And then this is really a result of that. And I think it just feels like you're looking at the world with open eyes. And otherwise, you're just, even though you're seeing it, but you're not understanding it.
Yeah. I think also it comes down to awareness. And like you were saying, Sola, the stories we tell, that's in the United States. What are the stories we tell about women on screen, in schools? What do we say to girls? And then also thinking more globally, for example, in Afghanistan, when the world was paying attention to what was happening in 2021, when the Taliban was taking over the country, there were a lot of conversations about, oh, maybe this Taliban is different. Maybe they want to be a part of the world order. Maybe they won't repress women as much. And it was only after we stopped telling the stories of girls and women in that country and we turned away that suddenly the Taliban just had free rein to institute now, I think it's 75 different edicts that are directly targeted at women and girls, banning girls from education, banning women from the workplace, requiring women to only leave the home with a male guardian. And when we think about our responsibility, I think the most important thing that individual people can do is continue to seek out stories of girls and women living in the country now. Continue to read about the new edict, because the 76th edict is just as bad as the first and the second edict. It's just that the world has stopped paying attention. So I think there's great power in stories and in awareness. And that's really what we have to harness.
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective. And I think too of the hardships of different countries and how what I hear and perceive what you're explaining, it's like, how can you even feel like a valid human? Sola, as you were saying earlier, like questioned life's purpose, right? If you don't have autonomy, if your only access to the outside world is with a male guardian, right? Like, then am I even my own person? Is really hard to move through the world. And there are absolutely terrors going on in multiple wars right now with Russia and Ukraine, Gaza, Palestine, and the Israel war, like everything that is happening. And I think we as Americans are often very quick to be like, okay, what can I do? I'm going to donate. I'm going to talk about it. And then like, oh, nothing's changing. I can't process. I tune out. And I think it's a good reminder that there are stories being told, both of people doing good things and trying to make change and progress and not let a 76th edict happen, and that also we can potentially keep fighting for the people, right? Like whichever side of any war someone is on, really who suffers are the people that are inside those countries who don't want to be part of anything that's happening, but are stuck in the middle. And it sounds like that was very much the story of your personal experience, as well as living in the country and experiencing some of the hardships of that. And I think if we as people can stop with the divisiveness of like, oh, it's war, it's this and whatever, and start thinking about the people who are suffering as the result of it, it can have the potential to save lives, really. Like your life is an incredible story, an example of what is possible if people have access. And unfortunately, the women in the country that you came from don't have the same rights even that you did at that time. And so it's an impossible thing to wrap our hearts and our brains around. And I appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable and to share that story and to help us all try to remain connected to that humanitarian part of it. And like I said at the top of the show, like this is, we talk a lot about science. I'm a super science oriented nerd. So I appreciate, Sola, that you're a quantum physics nerd at Tufts University. I'm here for it. Took me a while to embrace my nerdiness, but I'm here now. And I like to do these kinds of shows because even though it's not directly related to our own personal health, like I said, the women who are in similar situations as you, or the people who are experiencing war and all of these kinds of things, like how can they worry about biohacking their personal health when they're worried about basic safety and those kinds of things? And so we have to be open to the idea community as all being part of that story of safety, and all of those things come into play at levels that those of us that haven't had that lived experience just can't wrap our minds around. And so it's people like you that allow us to do it. And I appreciate both of your time. Before we go, I do always like to leave listeners with something positive and actionable that they can take away to be of service, because I never want anyone to listen to a show and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed with what I learned. So instead, can you each share maybe one thing that you suggest someone do after they listen to the show if they feel like they want to make a difference somehow?
I would echo what I said before. Go to the library, go online, look for other stories, not just from Afghanistan, but if you're moved by what's happening to women, of stories of women all around the world. And I think on one hand, that helps us to educate ourselves about the dire situations, but it also gives us a tremendous amount of hope and belief, as Sola said, in the resilience. And hopefully that's something really positive to carry forward.
And for me, it's really a lot of the time when we hear about a war or something, we just like the suffering of the people, and then we feel like, oh, we need to help them. But in that way, we feel like, oh, why should I be responsible and things like that. But I think really understanding more the dynamics of what that led into, and a lot of the time, like the countries who are in power are responsible for those kinds of things, for the suffering of the people. I think knowing that will makes you feel more morally responsible, and you don't feel like, oh, I'm overwhelmed by it. And I think for me, understanding things in that way, it makes me think at the people more differently than when they're just in an extreme situation and they're suffering.
Well, listeners, if you'd like to learn more, you can go to defiantdreams.com, where there's information about the book and the authors, and we'll put links in the show notes to Sola and Milena's social media, as well as we can check out their YouTube channel, defiantdreams-book. Is there anything else you all would like to mention before we say goodbye?
No, thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you so much both for being here and sharing your stories and the work that both of you are doing. I'm excited to see. Milena, I did not write a book before I graduated and I didn't go to Stanford. So you have a lot in your future. I'm excited for you, and you're already amazing and doing great things. And I'm excited for the world to experience the goodness that you ladies are putting out into the world. So thank you so much for being here. And listeners, we'll be back again on Friday with a regular scheduled show for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.